Today's shiur in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Lamed Vav. We begin on the very top line, Lamed Vav Amin Aleph, where we quote the Mishnah. The Mishnah had said that an esrog that was nistak, it had a crack in it, or was nikev, it had a hole in it, a puncture. Now this puncture was talking about mefulosh, it went through and through, so then the esrog is possible. The esrog is not kosher in that situation. However, if it didn't go through and through, we said that it would be kosher. Now, Tani Ula Bar. Now the gear, so that we have is Chanina, but it should be Chinina. And the same thing, the Hagos HaBach tells us in Rashi as well, it should be Ula Bar Chinina. So what did Ula Bar Chinina say? He commented on the Mishnah and he said, Nikev Nekev Mefulash. If you have a puncture that goes through and through, so then even a mashu, there is no minimum size in that situation, even if it's a mashu, it is going to be possible. However, v'she'enam a foolish, if it doesn't go through and through, then b'che'isor, then it would have to have a hole the size of an isor. Now, you're not missing anything. We're not talking here about where something was chaser. The Mishnah said that if it was chaser, if something was missing, so then that's a different situation than if it just has a puncture without something being missing. So he's qualifying the punctures without something being missing. If it goes through and through from one side to the other side of the esrog, then even if it's a mashu, it's a very, very small hole, but that would be posel, the esrog. If it doesn't go through and through, so then if it makes an indentation, Rashi says, for example, if you have a yosed, a peg of some sort, yosed ova, a thick peg that's pressed in against the esrog, so it makes an indentation in the esrog, but not missing any part of the esrog, and it doesn't go through and through, so that's what Ula Bar Chinina is talking about. In that situation, it would be required to have a significant size of that indentation, ke'isar, a certain type of a coin. The Gemara says, "Boy, Rava, Rava asked, no duba esrog simoni treifa mahu." Rava says, if an esrog had similar signs of treifos that we find in an animal. We have the famous Gemara that tells us that there are 18 treifos, the Shmon Esrei treifos that you can find in an animal. Shabahema nitrufa barashi says, and Rava wants to equate similar blemishes in an esrog that would be occurring in an animal, would that make it like in an animal treifa? Would that make it in an esrog treifa? That's Rava's question. What would happen if an esrog got certain types of simoni treifa that an animal has? Would that make the esrog puzzle? Moro questions what Rava is talking about. My komaboyle, what exactly is Rava asking over here? What type of treifos occur in an esrog that could occur in an animal? Nikla, if you're telling me that it was peeled, that the esrog lost its peeled, and that would be the equivalent of a gluda, an animal that lost its skin. So tanina, that we already had at the end of yesterday's shiur, where we said that it depends on whether it's kula or miktsasa, the entire skin was removed of the esrog or the animal, or only part of the skin was removed of the esrog or the animal. And there are different halachos in regards to an animal than there are in regards to an esrog. And even yesterday, we said there was a machlokes in Rashi, for example, in Tosos, the Rabbeinu Chananel, and others, as to what it meant that it would depend if it was all removed or only partially removed. So if you remember from the end of yesterday, there were different opinions. So if you're asking me, just like there's a gluda, an animal that loses its skin, that makes the animal a treifa, so too, by an esrog, that would make it a treifa. Well, we already said that's niklaf. Why would Rava be asking that? You're going to tell me nistak? Nistak, you're telling me that if an animal has a crack in it, now where would that crack be? So, for example, if the animal had a crack on its trachea, on the what we call the windpipe, and in that crack, if it was in a certain level of the trachea, encompassing all of the trachea, so that would make the animal a treifa. So the equivalent would be if you had such a crack in an esrog, it would make it into a treifa as well. So tanina, we had that. We said that if the esrog has a crack, so then it's a non-kosher esrog. So again, what would Rava be asking? And finally, you're going to tell me, nikave, if it has a puncture, and this would be, for example, if an animal has a puncture in the various membranes that surround the brain or the spinal cord, so that makes the animal a treifa. So the equivalent would be if there was a puncture in the esrog, could make it into a treifa. So that's nikev. That's what Ula Bar Chinina just explained. The Mishnah was talking about what type of punctures would make the esrog treifa. So again, asked and answered. Nikev tanina. So what in the world is Rava asking us over here? Oh, if you had an example of a treifa in an animal, would that make it a treifa in an esrog? The three possible examples that we could think of are all specifically listed in regards to an esrog. What is Rava's question? So Gemara says, Ki koma boile, what Rava was really driving at, his question really was, Ki de ula Rav Yochanan. Ula said the name Rav Yochanan, the following halacha. When you have a lung, now the lung is a very, very important organ in a human being and in an animal, and the lung is surrounded by what we call a visceral pleura and a parietal pleura. Basically, these are different membranes that surround the lung, and there is fluid that goes in between these membranes that encompasses the lung. So Rashi tells us, "Habosor shebesocha krum nimuach v'nasa kamayim." He says, now, if I'm understanding Rashi correctly, he's not talking about the area in between the two layers of membrane, but he's talking about below, underneath the what we call the visceral pleura that is attached to the lung. Underneath that, the lung tissue started to disintegrate and decay, and that became like mayim. The flesh of the lung that's inside the membrane melted, nimoach, it disintegrated, and became like water. This is something we call liquefaction necrosis. So that's what they're referring to. So the lung tissue basically gets mushy, but it's held in place by these membranes. In any event, Ula Amar Yochanan said, if the lung is like this, Reya Shenishbecha Kiketon, if the lung is like a liquid, it turned from a solid into a liquid, it had this liquefaction necrosis, and it could be poured like a glass of water, kishera. Nevertheless, the lung, since it's held in place by the membranes around it, so the lung is not called a trefa. That doesn't make the animal into a trefa. That's what Ula Rav Yochanan said. But Amar Rava, Rava further qualified that, and he said, that's only true, vu dekaima simponha. That's only when the breathing tubes within the lung, what are known as the bronchi and the bronchioles, their architecture has not become liquefied. So there's potential, what Rav is really saying, for the lung tissue to regenerate. So when the simpona are still intact, when these tubes for breathing, the bronchi and the bronchioles are still intact, so then the lung isn't considered dead, and therefore the animal is not considered a trefa. However, Rav said, "Halo kaime simpona," if these simpones, these tubes, I wonder if the word symphony comes from this with all the wind instruments, if these tubes are not intact anymore, so then the lung architecture is essentially destroyed and there's no hope for this lung, and therefore the animal is a trefa, and therefore holokaima simpona trefa. So Rava is explaining Ulam Rav Yochanan to now understand the question that Rava asked. Rava is really asking now, hachamai, in the case of an esrog also has membranes inside of it. You have the outer peel, and then you have inner layers that are partially protected by something equivalent to the pleura, the membranes of the lung, that are the rind inside the esrog. And then inside, in the middle of the esrog, you have the area of the zera, of the seed, which has membranes around that as well. So maybe Rava is asking as follows, Hochamai, in regards to the esrog, how do we compare it to the lung? Do we say, Dilma Hasam, in regards to the lung, the reason why we say that unless it's all turned to water, including the bronchi, and all the membranes are lost, that's hu delo shalit boavira. The reason why it could return to life if the bronchi are still present and not be considered a trefa is because the outside air doesn't impact it because it's not exposed to the outside air. And therefore, hador barya. Therefore, it could get better, even though it's pretty sick, it could get better, and therefore it's not a trefa. As opposed to, but with the esrog of a hocha, the shalit boavira, the esrog is exposed to the air. The whole esrog is outside the body. It's not inside the body. And therefore, seruchei misrachas, it's too late, and it's not going to be able to heal. And if you have these types of liquefaction, so to say, within the esrog, that's it. The esrog is never going to be returned to good health, and therefore, it is possible. Or, odilma, loshna, or no. We say just like the lung, if this liquefaction inside the lung occurs, it still could return back to normal life, as long as the inner structures, the bronchi and the bronchioles, are intact. So too by the esrog, as long as the zera, the seeds inside, and the protecting tubes around them are still intact, so then the esrog can also return to life. That was Rava's question. So what's the answer? The Gemara says, Toshma, I'll show you from the following brisa. It says, Esrog tofuach soruach. If you have an esrog that is, tofuach really means swollen. If you look in the Lazi Rashi, he tells us that this means, Loshon of the Hisnafeach, it swells up. Or, if it's saruach, it means it's spoiled, decayed. So an esrog that right now we don't define really what tefuach and saruach is, the ultimate question will be, doesn't tefuach mean from the outside and saruach mean from the inside? In other words, if the inside is destroyed, the esrog is pasul. So therefore, that is the answer that we're looking for to this question that Rava had. But we haven't gotten yet to that point. I just jumped ahead a little bit. Right now, all we know is esrog, tefuach, saruach. If you have an esrog that is swollen, or the esrog is spoiled. Or if you have an esrog that is kavush, if it's pickled. Rashi explains that kavush means pickled in chometz, vinegar, or chardol, in mustard. Or if it's sholuk, that means mevushal b'yoser, or beroschlin. If it's excessively cooked with fire, and it's boiled. So in other words, it's cooked. Or if it's kushi, if it is a dark color, or if it's lavan, or it's a white color, or it's menuma, or it's a spotted color, all of these types of esrogim are pasul, they're no good. Likewise, if you have esrog kikadur, if you have an esrog that is like a ball, then it's also pasul. Rashi explains this mean he'osui kimin kadur agul, like a round ball. The Laz Rashi word that's used over here means kadur, round. So it's also no good. There is an opinion, the Eshomim, afatiyom, that an esrog that is a twin esrog is also possible. Now, what is a twin esrog? So Rashi tells us over here, shnayim dvukim yachad. You have basically two esrogs that are growing together as one. So they share the pitum, they share the okets, but it's like two esrogs growing like Siamese twins. So in this situation, there's a Yesh Omen that says that this is possible as well. There is, apparently, because this is a Yesh Omen, there's another opinion that's not brought down over here that would say that this is a kosher esrog, because after all, it's acting as one esrog, it's not acting as two esrog. In any event, then the Brisa tells us, an esrog ha-boser. Boser is a borrowed term that's used in the maturation of a grape. And this is a boser, is an early stage of the maturation. So an esrog that is at the boser stage of its maturation, so Rabbi Akiva's poser, Rabbi Akiva says it's no good. And the Chacham and Machshirim, the Chacham say that it is good. What's the reasoning behind this? We'll get to it in a few moments. Gidlo b'defus, if you put an esrog as it's growing inside some sort of a defus is a form, so you can want to make a square esrog, you put the esrog into a container that will force it to grow only in certain ways, you'll end up actually having a square esrog. So if you put an esrog in a defus, vasol k'min birya acheres, and you make it into another type of a creature, another type of a structure, in other words, it doesn't look like an esrog, so then it's also possible. An esrog, part of the status of making an esrog, it has to look like an esrog. So if you make it into a square esrog, if you make it into a shape of something else, so then it's not kosher as well. That's the brisa. Now, let's get to our question. We're trying to resolve, what about if the inside of the esrog is liquefied, if it's rotted, if it's spoiled, is that a kosher esrog or not? So Gemara says, K'toni, mias tafuach saruach. We said these two first types of an esrog, tofuach and saruach, swollen and spoiled, are no good. Now, why did you tell me both of them? My lav doesn't mean tofuach mi bachutz, swollen means on the outside, v'saruach means bim bifnim, on the inside, and therefore, if the inside has become destroyed, then it's pasul. So the Gemara says, no, that's not necessarily true. Well, idi v'idi mi bachutz. In fact, tofuach and saruach are both on the outside, and it doesn't tell me anything about what the dinner would be on the inside. So, why do you need both of them? Velo kasha, because they're different. Hod de tofach, if it's swollen, afal gab de lo sarach, even though it's not spoiled. And hod de sarach, even though it's spoiled, afal gab de lo tofach, even though it's not swollen. They're two different types of external blemishes on the esrog, has no din or no detail as to what would be the halacha if the inside was liquefied. Would that be a psul or not be a psul? We don't come to a conclusion. Mark continues to quote this price. So Amamar, it tells us, esrog kushi pasul, says that a dark-colored esrog either comes from Ethiopia, that's one of the explanations we had previously when we said this, or just a dark-colored esrog. So it's pasul, it's no good. Mark says we have a price that says it is good. Votanya kushi kosher, a kushi esrog is kosher, in direct contradiction to our Mishnah. But that brisa then says, domele kushi, if it's similar to a dark esrog, then it's pasul. Rashi is an interesting word, domele kushi. He says, shegodel kan, v'hareyu shachar. It's not from Ethiopia, but it grows over here, and it is in fact dark. And it's possible, he says, shenidmahu, because it's a nidma, it's like a kushi esrog, and then he uses the word counterfeit, which means it's like a fake kushi esrog, but a real kushi esrog would be good. Now, why is that so? And we then have to explain the problem with our Mishnah, but first let's explain why would a kushi be kosher according to the Braisa, but a counterfeit kushi be possible? And the simple answer that Rashi gives over here, kushi atzmo hainutam de kosher, de urchehu, because in Ethiopia, assuming it comes from Ethiopia or wherever it comes from, so that was the standard, that was normal, and therefore that's not a problem, and it's not going to be strange or unusual. It's going to be hadar, and that's why an actual kushi esrog is kosher. It's only if it's a counterfeit kushi, it's in a place where you don't normally have such esrogim, that in fact it would be possible. And this is how you actually can now answer the question, how can our Mishnah tell us that an esrog kushi is possible, but the Braisa say that an esrog kushi is kosher? So Rabbaye, ki tana nami mastisa, when our Mishnah said that an esrog kushi is possible, it wasn't talking about a real kushi one, it was talking about the counterfeit kushi ones. Domel kushi tanan, it really was talking about the counterfeit similar to a kushi one, but in a place where they didn't have them. So therefore it's unusual, it's not shachiach, and therefore it is possible. So there's no contradiction between the Mishnah and the Braisa, and there's no contradiction in the Braisa why a kushi is kosher and a domel kushi is possible. That's teretz number one from Abaye. Teretz number two is from Rava. Rava Amar Lo Kasha. You can easily reconcile the Mishnah and the Braisa. It depends where you're dealing with. It's really the same teretz as Abaye said. Halon for Haluhu. It depends where you are. If you're in Bavel, so then the din is one thing. Haluhu, if you're in Eretz Yisrael, the din is something else. Again, it has to do with the likelihood of you encountering such a srogan. As Rashi says, La'olam masnisin kushi nami pasul. Our Mishnah says that a real kushi esrog is also pasul. So where is it kosher? The Braisa tells us that it's kosher. It's not a stira. It depends. Livnei Eretz Yisrael, Shurachokim, the Eretz Kush, the people living in Eretz Yisrael, which are distant, there's not a lot of travel to Ethiopia, they're not used to seeing them, so that's why they're no good. The Braisa is talking about Bavel, Bnei Bavel, Shekrovim the Kush, they're closer to Kush, not necessarily geographically, but in terms of commerce, in terms of trade, in terms of likelihood of seeing it, Regilim Bahem, they're more likely to have seen them. And therefore, it is going to be technically a question of how unusual it is. If it's not unusual, then it's kosher. If it is unusual, then it's no good. Okay. Margo's Baisa, quoting the Baisa, Esrog HaBoser, we said Rabbi Kiva posed with Chum Machshirin. So Rabbi Kiva said that this early stage Boser Esrog is no good, and the Chum say it's good. What's the Machlokas here? Amar Rabba. Rabba says, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Shimon, Amru Dover Echad. Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shimon both say the same din. Rabbi Akiva had the Amorin. Rabbi Akiva just said that if it's small, that's the simple understanding of Rashi, that if it's a small esrog, it's no good. So Rabbi Akiva said that, and Rabbi Shimon says the same thing. Rabbi Akiva said it over here in our Mishnah. And where did Rabbi Shimon say it? Rabbi Shimon, Mahi, where is that? Because now we have the Girsa, the Tanya, but it really is the Mishnah, the Tanya, the Tnan it should be. We learned in the Mishnah in Maestros, where it tells us, this is dealing with, do you or do you not have to take Maestros? Rabbi Shimon, Poter Esro Esrogim Bekotnan. Rabbi Shimon says, when an Esrog is small, and you pluck it, there is no Chiyav of Maestros when it's small. Implying that at an early stage in the maturation process or in the physical size, so then it doesn't require this, it doesn't acquire the status of being a fruit, and therefore there is no chiyah to take trumas and maisus on it. Now, Amalei Abaye, Abaye said to Abdu'l-Malohi, who says, Rabba, that you are correct in saying that Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shimon both say the same thing? You said they say Amru Dover Echad, maybe they don't. You know why Rabbi Akiva says in regards to an esrog that this boser stage is not considered a kosher esrog, the ba'in and hadar veleka, because a very small esrog, either in, it's very immature or it's just even a physically small size. Tosas doesn't like the fact that we say this is small size because our Mishnah discussed a walnut or a beitza size, and it would be unusual to actually just discuss a new din of size over here, and therefore Tosas says it's really dealing with the maturation. So the relative one-third, let's say, stage of a boser that to the full ripened grape, so to the one-third stage of an esrog to the full ripened esrog. I made up that number one-third, but a boser is an early level of maturity of the grape. So too, this is an early level of maturity of the esrog, even though the size may be bigger than a walnut, so the size isn't the problem, size may be bigger than a kibetza, so the physical size isn't the problem, but it's not mature enough. So it's not considered hadar, and therefore it's not considered a kosher esrog. But that's a din in esrog with hadar. But in regards to trumas and maisus, Abba Hassam ki rabbanus hirulei. He says, what does it have to do with trumas and maisus? It's edible, and therefore it would be chayiv in trumas and maisus, not like Rabbi Shimon. And you know what? In Ami, you could say that Rabbi Shimon doesn't hold like Rabbi Kiva. Ad kan lo kama Rabbi Shimon Hassam. Rabbi Kiva says over there that in regards to the esrogim that are small, they're part of trumas and maisus. You know why? Because the pasuk tells us ela d'chsiv aser t'aser is called truas zarecha. It has to be something kederech shebnei adam motzi and lizria. Just like a person could take this fruit out and plant it, this grain out and plant it, it has to be mature enough that the seeds inside of it would grow new fruit. That's the shear for which you have to take off trumas and maisus, and therefore the esrog when it's very small can't be using the seeds to go and create a new esrog. So that's why it's part of the trumas and maisos. But in regards to the halacha of esrog, have a halacha to rabbanon sviulei. They would hold like the rabbanon that this is mature enough to be called an esrog, and therefore itaka could be used as a kosher esrog because it has the right size or maturity. And therefore, who says that Rabbi Akiva holds like Rabbi Shimon and that Rabbi Shimon holds like Rabbi Akiva? You, Rabba, are incorrect. And the Gemara concludes, we turn to Lamed Vav Amid Beis, Esu Lo Midi. There's nothing more to say on the subject. As the top Rashi says, Ein Lodun, Achai Dov Zeh. Don't ask any more questions about this. The Lo Savar Rabbi Shimon Kerbi Akiva, the Lo Rabbi Akiva Savar Kerbi Shimon. The two Shitas have nothing to do with each other. Then we continue quoting the Brites that said, Gidlo B'Defus, if you grew it in some sort of a mold or a form, Basol Kemen Bir Ya'acheres Pasol, and you made it into something that doesn't look like an esrog, it's Pasol. Amar Rava, Rava says, that was only said, Lo Shanu Elo Kemen Bir Ya'acheres, if it looks like something else. Avo Kibir Yasov, you put it into a mold so it would look like a beautiful esrog. You make it with all the blitos, and you make a beautiful mold so the esrog is going to come out pristine, like a beautiful, perfectly formed esrog, so then it would be kosher. Avo Kivri also, like an esrog, if the mold was like an esrog, it'd be perfectly kosher. Gemara says, Pshita, who would have thought otherwise? After all, read the Braisa. It said, Kemin birya acheres. Now, we have the Girsa Tanan, but again, it was a Braisa, so it should be Tanya. So, that's exactly what the Braisa said. It had to be like birya acheres. So, why would I think that if it was like its own esrog, Kibri also, it would not be kosher? So, Gemara said, no, the other meaning would be, Lo Tzricha, you need to tell me this, the Avida Dape Dape, because you could make it like accentuated, super accentuated esrog, that it should have many, many boards to it. And you can see beautiful illustrations of this both in the Illustrated Gemara and in the Pirush Chai, where basically you have a super accentuated esrog. So you might have thought that that's not good, but the answer is no, that is also technically good, because that's not considered a birya acheres. Gemara continues and says, Itmar, we learned in the base Madrash, Esrog Shena Kavu Achbarim, if an Esrog was chewed upon, eaten up by Achbarim, by mice, so Amar Rav, Ein Zeh Hadar. Rav says it's no good, because it's no longer considered Hadar, and it's possible. Gemara says, really, Ini? But, Vahar, Rabbi Chanina, Matbil Bey, Finofik Bey. You know what Rabbi Chanina did? He took a bite out of his esrog, he dipped it into something, matbil bay, and then he ate it, and then with the leftover esrog, vinovik bay, he used it to fulfill his mitzvah on day 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or 7. On day 1, it wouldn't be good because it was designated as an esrog of mitzvah, and you're not allowed to do something else with it. But here he had a second one, which he ate on day 1, and then he designated on day 2 to be his kosher esrog, even though it had a bite out of it. So how can you tell me, Rav, that it's not considered hadar with a bite out of it by the mice? When Rabbi Chanina took a bite out of it, it's still considered hadar. So Gemara says, wait a second, this is the only problem that you have? That Rabbi Chanina doesn't agree with Rav? Rabbi Chanina, kashim astisin. What about our Mishnah? Our Mishnah said that if it's missing something, then it's not kosher. So Rabbi Chanina took a bite out of it, that's missing something. So Gemara says, no, the Mishnah is not a problem to Rabbi Chanina. Why is the Mishnah itself which said that if it's missing, it's chaser, that it's missing something, it's no good, and that's not a problem for Rabbi Chanina, because kan biyom tov rishon, our Mishnah is talking about on the first day, when you must have it pristine, kan biyom tov sheni, and Rabbi Chanina took a bite out of it on day 2, when you don't need to have it pristine. Ela l'rav, Rav who says it's not hadar, so then, kasha, Rabbi Chanina obviously holds that it is still hadar when you take a bite out of it. So the word says, no. Rav would tell you, Shiny Achbarim. Mice are different. Why? The meise, they're disgusting. If a mice eats something, you don't want to eat it. Whereas if your spouse, your wife, ate something, you would take a bite about from it afterwards. Your kids eat something, you would take a bite from it afterwards. That's not necessarily in any way bothersome to you. Mice, if mice eat something, you wouldn't eat it. So achbarim ademisi, they turn the esog into being something that's more, something that's disgusting. As opposed to, if a human being, if Rabbi Chanina ate it, right, the Rebbe eats something, the Hasidim all eat the shrayim. So therefore, that's not disgusting, that's heliga. So therefore, it's not a problem. So that's how Rav would explain why Rabbi Chanina could do it, but the mice would be no good. That's version number one of this discussion. Ika the Amrei, version number two of this discussion is as follows. Amar Rav, Rav said, in fact, zehadar, even though the mice took a bite out of it, the esrog still retains its status of being a hadar esrog. Why? Dehar Rabbi Chanina, matbil ba. Rabbi Chanina used to dip his esrog into a dip and eat it, and then venafik bay, and then he would go and use it the next day to fulfill the mitzvah of esrog. Gemara says, Rabbi Chanina, kasha masnisin, how could Rabbi Chanina do this? Didn't our Mishnah say that if it's chaser, it's no good? So again, says, lo kasha, depends which day. Kan biyom tovishon, kan biyom tosheni. On the first day, it has to be beautiful, has to be perfect, has to be pristine. As opposed to on the other days, if it's missing something, doesn't necessarily mean that you can't use it. It's not the most beautiful thing in the world. You could use it on the other days, but not on the first day. And therefore, that's the stira that's resolved by saying, kan biyom tov rishon, kan biyom tov sheni. Again, yom tov sheni here means any other day other than the first day. It doesn't have anything to do with yom tov sheni shogalius. Then we quote the Mishnah, which talked about the size of the esrog. We said, the Rav Meir says that it has to be the size of a walnut. And the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda was it had to be the size of a beitza, of an egg. So the Gemara tells us, we quote the Mishnah, Esrog kata v'chulei. So I'm a Rafram bar Papa. Rafram bar Papa said, b'machlokas kan, kach machlokas b'avonim mikurzolos. The same machlokas we have over here between Rav Meir and Rabbi Yehuda as to the size of an esrog was the same machlokas they had in terms of wiping oneself on Shabbos using muktzah rocks. And they there had the same machlokas, how big the rocks could be. And Rav Meir over there said that the rock could be only up to the size of a walnut. And Rav Yehuda said, no, it could even be up to the size of a kibbutz. I always say this, I can never say it enough, because I think it's a very good pshat. I heard from a Rebbeim, this is one of the best reasons that a person should say, sh'asa li kol tzarchi every day. Imagine if we had to live in the times of the Gemara, where we didn't have Charmin, if we didn't have nice, smooth, comfortable toilet paper, and we had to wipe ourselves to clean ourselves with rocks. Right, we couldn't survive in that type of a setting. Shosli called Sarchi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of our needs. So they had to wipe themselves with rocks. So in any event, the din by esrog is the same din in terms of the size of the rocks, albeit for different reasons and for different halachic parameters. But as a mnemonic, the same thing, Rafram Bar Papa tells us, by the esrog is the din by these avonim mikurzolos, these sharp stones, how big they have to be. The tiny, because we learned the Gemara in Shabbos, the Braisa taught us there, b'Shabbos, on Shabbos when rocks are muktza, which is only a din, the Rabbanon, of course, so because of Kavod HaBrios, the rabbis allowed us to put aside the din of muktza, they never set it into place, really, under these circumstances of Kavod HaBrios, that a person could take shalosh avonim mikurzolos, take three of these sharp rocks into the bathroom, mutar lahaknis lebeis hakisei, these sharp rocks in order to wipe oneself. The kamash urin, how big did they have to be? Rameh omer ke'egos, Rameh said it was a walnut, egos size was the maximum, here it's the maximum, by the esrog gets the minimum, and Yehuda said, no, the maximum size would be kibbutz, and Rav Yehuda said, by the esrog, the minimum size is kibbutz. It's a mnemonic to help you remember the same din over here, same din over there, even though the shiurim for one are a minimum and for the other are a maximum. Then the Mishnah said, what's the maximum size of an esrog? So he said that the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda was that you had to be able to hold two of them in one hand. We said in case you had to switch your lulav and esrog from the right hand to the left hand, you did this simultaneously, so you had to be able to hold the equivalent of two esrogim, the Lula, the Hadas, and the Arovas would be like the size of one esrog, and the esrog, you have to be able to hold both of them, so you needed to hold in one hand two esrogim. So therefore, that's the maximum size that an esrog could be, according to Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yossi had said, no, even if you had to hold one esrog with both hands, that would be fine. That was the Mishnah. Begod, Luketesh, Yochaz, Bechulein. Tanya, we're learning the Brayis, so Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi said, Mais of Rabbi Yaakov, Rabbi Akiva. Again, Rabbi Yossi was one that said it could be very, very large, even an esrog that you have to hold both hands, right? A basketball-sized esrog, so that would be perfectly good. And he says, Mais of Shaya, Rabbi Yossi, Mais of Rabbi Akiva, the great Rabbi Akiva, Shabal de Besa Knesses, he one day time came to Sukkot in Shul, and the esrogo al Ksefo, his esrog was so big, he had to carry it on his back. So he used the huge esrog, and Haraya, Rabbi Yossi says, Rabbi Akiva was Yotzi with that esrog, so therefore there is no maximal size to an esrog. Whatever the size is, that's perfectly good. However, Amar Rabbi Yehuda argued with him, and Rabbi Yehuda says, Misham Raya, bring me a Raya from there. You didn't hear the rest of the story. When the rabbi saw that Rabbi Akiva came in with such an esrog, Afim Armalo, they told him, Ein ze hadr. That's not hadr. You think because it's huge, it's hadr? No, that's ugly. That's disfigured. Sometimes if a person is too tall, too big, too this, too that, so that's actually a negative. So, therefore, Rabbi Yehuda said, there was no raya from the fact that Rabbi Akiva came in with such a big esrog. In fact, the rabbis told him, that's not a hadr esrog. We go to the next Mishnah. Ein ogdin esalula velabimino. We had this previously. We said, according to the requirement of Rabbi Yehuda, that you had a mitzvah to do igud, so then, according to Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, this is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, you must do the binding, the igud, combining it together, ein ogdin esalulav ela bimino. You have to go and bind the lulav with only one of the dalid minim. So, the common way to do this is to take a piece of the lulav, and you bind the three minim, the lulav, the hadas, and the arava, together. You put them in a kashula as well, and you bind them together, and this way, you fulfill, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the mitzvah of igud, which is according to Rabbi Yehuda ma'akev, according to Chacham, it's just a mitzvah, but you fulfill this mitzvah and you can't fulfill it with something else because you'll be over baltosif. That's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Ramei disagrees. Ramei Romer afilu bechut b'mishicha. Elsewhere, Rashi has the girsa bechut shel mishicha, which means even with a piece of linen, a little thread, you can tie it with anything. There's no requirement to do it with the specific dalid minim because Rav Meir holds that there is no chiv to do igud, and if you do igud, that's fine. But there's no mitzvah to do so, and therefore you're not over Baal Tosef. Amar Rav Meir. Rav Meir says, I'll show you that I'm right. Ma'aseh ba'anshi Yerushalayim, the great people of Yerushalayim, what did they used to do? Shayu ogdenes lovem begimonios shozov. They used to really want to do zekeli ganveo. They wanted to beautify the mitzvos, isnoa lefonai b'mitzvos. So you know what they did? They took a gold chain, and they wrapped their lulav hadasim and aravos with a gold chain. Wow, that is beautiful, but that certainly isn't from the dalid minim. So Rav Meir says, you see, that you can do it even b'chut b'mishicha. You can do it with anything you want, because there is no mitzvah of igud, and it's not a problem of Baal Tosef. However, they responded back to Rav Meir, Amar lo, no, b'mino ha'yo'ogdino so milamata. They actually did first wrap it, like Rabbi Yehuda said, with a piece of lulav, and then they put the gold either on top of it or nearby it, and in this way, the gold wasn't really doing the igud. The igud was done with the mitzvah, and therefore the gold was just an additional adornment, and it's not over Baal Tosef. Morris starts and says, Amar Rava, that when you're talking about binding it with what the dalid minim, you could even use the parts of the tree of the palm tree, which you take the lulav from, but even though that's not the lulav itself. Afilu b'siv, that's the very thick growth that grows at the bottom of the tree that eventually becomes hard, and that would be like the first year it's soft, and then the second year it gets harder. And I feel it would be kara, the dikla, even the basic trunk, the thick wood of the palm tree. So you break off a piece and you use that for the binding. That's considered from the dalid minim as well. B'yama Rava, Rava said further, my time of the Rehuda, why did Rehuda say that you must use the dalid minim? Because kesavra luluv tzarech agit, as I mentioned already, he holds it is required to do the igud. It's not just a mitzvah, it's required. It's ma'ake. If you're not binding them together, you're not yotzi the mitzvah. And therefore, v'imaisi mino achrina, if you were to bring another species, a fifth species, have a chamisha mine, and that would be over Baal Tosef. And therefore, you can only use from the dalid minim. Now, the common practice is that we bind it with a lulav frond, but you technically could bind it with an arava. You could technically bind it with adasim, that would be fine as well. Big shiloh, could you bind it with like the rind of a esrog? That's a shiloh. Okay. Another thing that Rava said, Yom Rava, where do I get my idea that this is Rabbi Huda's reasoning? Because he says, the siv, the ikra, the dikla, because these barks or thick wood of the palm tree, mino, the lulavahu, that they are, in fact, part of the lulav. Where do I know this from? The Tanya, because we learn in the Brisa. The Pasuk tells us, Basukos Teshu, that you have to sit in a sukkah. Sukkah always means the schach. Sukkah shall call dover. It means that you could sit in a sukkah that's made out of anything. Now, whose opinion is that? Divrei Rav Meir. And along comes Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda Omer. Now, when we say that Rav Meir said that the schach can be made out of anything, it doesn't mean anything. We said already there are requirements. It has to be a dover, shekidulim, and a karka, and a makabal tuma. But within those parameters that it grows from the ground that doesn't accept tuma, it could be anything. That was the opinion of Rav Meir. Rav Yehuda Omer, no. Ain sukkah no heges elabi arboa minim shabalula. whatever the four species are, Luluv, Hadassim, Arabus, and Esrog, those can be used for Schach, but nothing else. And he says the Kal v'chomer, Vadin Nosin. I'll show you that it's true through a Kal v'chomer. Umar Luluv, Shinanoi, Balelus, Kibiyamim, Luluv, and we say Luluv here, we mean the Luluv, the Esrog, the Hadassim, the Arabus, they can only be taken during the daytime. Ainonoi, Gelabi Arbaminim, and nevertheless, you have to use the Arbaminim, you can't use something else. So certainly the Sukkah, Shinohegas, Balelus, Kibiyamim, the Sukkah, which is both during the day and during the night, Ainodin Shalote, Elabi Arbasminim, it certainly must be with the Arbaminim. So therefore, it's a Kal v'chomer that you must make the Schach with the Arbaminim. So the rabbis responded back to Rabbi Yehuda, that's not a good Kal v'chomer, because Kaldin Shata Don, Tchilos Lachmi, oh, it's a good Kal v'chomer at the beginning, but it's going to turn into a sofa, Lahakel, it's going to be a huge kula, so that's Eino Din, that's not a good Kal v'chomer. What do we mean by this? We turn to Lama Zayin and Aleph, because it's going to turn out to be a big kula. What happens if you live in Siberia, and Lo Motza Arbas Minim, they don't grow any Arba Minim in Siberia, but they have trees, and you can make a sukkah. So what's going to happen? Yeah, Yoshi V'batel, this chumrah that you said, that the schach has to be from the Dali Minim, is going to turn you in those places into not being able to sit in the sukkah all 7 days of sukkahs. Ba'Torah Omra, Basukos Teishu Shivas Yamin. So therefore, what you've done is you've made this chumrah of, oh, the schach should be from the Dali Minim, into a huge kula. Sukkah shall call dover, and instead of letting people sit in a sukkah shall call dover, you're now not letting them sit in a sukkah at all, because you're telling them, well, you can't use the bark that's found in Siberia, you must use lulavim, and there are no lulavim or adasim or esrogim or aravos in Siberia, and therefore those people can't be yotzei the mitzvah sukkah. And the Gemara says, "Lachein be'Ezra Omer." We see in Sefer Ezra it tells us it's actually found in Nehemiah. Again, Ezra and Nehemiah is considered one sefer, one of the 24 books of Tanakh. So it says in Ezra, but it really is found in Nehemiah. So in what we call Sefer Nehemiah, so ooh, how hard! Ezra goes and tells the people, "Go out to the mountains, love you, Ale Zayis, and go collect the wood of olive tree, Bale Eitz Shemen, the wood of the oil producing trees." Bali Hados, and the leaves and wood of the Hados, of the myrtle, the Ale Tamarim, and of the palm tree, the Ale Eitz Avos, and of the Arabos, and go, and we have the gears of the Asu, but it really should be Lasos, Sukos Kakosov, and go make a sukkah like the Torah tells us to do so. Now, notice here it says that you can bring all of these things that aren't from the Dali Minim. It said you can bring the olive trees, you can bring the Ale Shemen, Eitz Shemen, and things that aren't in the Dalet Minim. So therefore, it must be that you can make the Sukkah, i.e. the Schach, from non-Dalet Minim, another Raya against you, Rabbi Yehuda. No, what would Rabbi Yehuda say? That this is a Pasuk in Nehemiah. Rabbi Yehuda, how would he read this Pasuk? Rabbi Yehuda Savar, Hanin L'Defanos. You'd go and take the Ali Zayis and the Ali Yitzheven to make the walls. And then you take the Ali Hadas, the Ali Tamar, and the Ali Yitzavos to go and make the Schach. Ali Hados, the Ali Tamar, and the Ali Yitzavos, the Schach. Oh. In any event, Rava says further, Utnan, we learned in a Mishnah, now this Mishnah, we had early in the Masechta, Mesachachim bin Asarim, did Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda himself, this Rabbi Yehuda says that you can go be Mesachach bin Asarim with wood. Now, what type of wood must we be dealing with? Obviously, Amma, this is talking about the wood of the palm tree. That's the sieve and the ikra de dikla. Amma, sieve, the ikra de dikla, mina de lulavahu. Obviously, if he holds that you have to make the schach from the dalet minim, and you're using wood from the base of the tree, of the palm tree, and not the lulav itself. So clearly, you see from here, Shema Mina, Rava is correct. He said, this is my proof that Rabbi Yehuda holds that the sieve and the ikra de dikla could be used for the binding of the dalet minim as well, because they can be used for the schach, and he holds that both of them must be from the dalet minim. With this, we conclude today's shir.